This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Thanksgiving is often a time for families to come together and share a meal. And thanks to organizations around the La Crosse area, the holiday is also a time for the community to come together and serve those in need. Joining us to talk about local community Thanksgiving dinners are Nick Marcoux, a board member for the La Crosse Community Thanksgiving Dinner, Jean Lundy, a founder and committee member from the Onalaska and Holman Community Thanksgiving Dinner, Les Stanley, coordinator of the Sparta Community Thanksgiving Dinner, and Aaron Waldhart, executive director of Wafer, a food pantry in La Crosse. Nick, the La Crosse Community Thanksgiving Dinner has been around for almost 40 years now, and I wonder if you could talk a little bit about how the effort got started.
So we're on our 38th year. We started with 100 volunteers in a church hall and served 300 dinners the first year. Since then, we've outgrown the space. We've been at the La Crosse Center since I can remember. 700 volunteers now come together, serve about 3,000 plus dinners every year.
I mean, it sounds like this scale of this dinner has obviously changed a lot, but I wonder if the spirit of it or just those who are involved have changed over the years.
Spirit has stayed the same. We really want the dinner to be a place where people can come talk to their neighbors. We feel like you don't really know anyone else's life until you're walking in their shoes. So we want walls to come down and people to get a chance to, you know, do something kind for somebody else or smile at somebody else. If you see somebody else struggling, help. That's what this community has always been, and that's what this dinner's always been to us.
Why do you think this has become a tradition in La Crosse?
La Crosse is, I think, a very unique community in terms of everyone here seems to really step up to help anyone else in this community. I've lived here my whole life. The city has always felt like just one giant family. So if somebody needs help with something, a lot of people are a little too proud to ask for help, but everyone around here is always there to help. So I think that's the spirit of this dinner and the other dinners in this area, and not just this one day, but throughout the entire year, these communities really step up to help neighbors.
Jean, can you share a little bit about how the Onalaska and Holman Community Thanksgiving Dinner got started and how it expanded to include Holman as well in this community dinner?
Sure. About 9 years ago, Dan Ferries and I were sitting around kind of saying, you know, we're not the only ones that are actually sitting here all by ourselves on Thanksgiving Day. So we kind of decided that in 2011 we were going to get together a lot of our friends, which is a community, and help serve a meal so that they could come together as a community and also to help those in need. A huge shout out and also thank you for La Crosse to helping us, the community Thanksgiving dinner, helping us saying what we did right and what we did wrong. And, you know, it's awesome that other people can, you know, help and not feel like they are territorial on their particular dinner or whatever it is that they're doing. So I think that every single year we've continued to grow. We thought maybe the first year at about 200, 250. I know that Nick was mentioning probably about 300 that they served the first year. That's kind of what we had planned on. But it kept growing, and the recognition kept growing, so we served over 700 the first year. This year, we're probably going to be serving 1,500, which includes Holman. We have Onalaska Hilltopper Rotary, Onalaska Rotary, and also the Holman Rotary that are actually taking charge of it currently.
Yeah, I wonder if just the kind of the sheer numbers really speaks to the fact that there is a demand for a community dinner at this time of year.
Absolutely. And I think that the need is there as well as families coming together because they may not have something going on Thanksgiving Day. Maybe it's the following weekend that they're doing something with their family members. So it's something to make sure that we bring people together in the spirit of Thanksgiving. And obviously, we're being thankful for the things that we have.
Les, the Sparta Community Thanksgiving Dinner has been around for a while. I wonder if you can share how this effort in Sparta got started and maybe how it's changed over time.
The program as it exists now began in 1982 following a fire at the Congregational Church, and it started out being a thank you on the part of that congregation for the community, and it, like a number of these other programs locally, it outgrew the first facility, it outgrew the second facility, and now we're at, in the largest dining hall in town, which is at the American Legion Hall.
What do you think has driven interest in this dinner in Sparta?
I think the sense of community that, that comes from that, and the people have found that that is a place of fellowship and great joy. I was surprised last year, my first year at this, at the amount of noise in that dining hall, which is a very joyous sound to me when people are relaxed and having fun and having a good time. They tend to talk, and that was very refreshing to me.
Aaron, Wafer provides food to families all year round, but I wonder if your operations change at all during the holiday season, or maybe the need you see from people changes at all.
Well, during the holiday season, we maybe see a little bit of an increase in traffic, the number of people that are coming in or the frequency with which they are coming in. But it really does maintain a pretty steady amount all year round. You know, I think one of the greatest things that happens around the holidays in particular is just the gratitude that people have. You know, they're grateful for our services all the time. But when we hear, you know, I wouldn't be able to have Thanksgiving dinner without this, or now I have food to put on the table, I think the thing that we maybe forget about sometimes is food is part of fellowship. And so when you come together on a holiday, there is an element of how it is surrounded by food, and it's, they're so interwoven. And it so it really allows people to have probably what everyone pictures a holiday to be like, that they won't have to miss out on that fellowship or community aspect either.
Do you feel like people in the community recognize, like, how many of their neighbors, you know, kind of visit food pantries like Wafer?
I don't think so. I think food insecurity is really hidden. You know, like Nick talked about, people being proud, not wanting to ask for help. You know, we face that too. You know, we see people who struggle, or we get phone calls from them just inquiring about what we do, but walking through that door is really hard. And so I think once people come in and they're able to, especially with volunteering, come in and just spend some time with the people that we serve, it is very eye-opening. It's eye-opening for the people that what you might think happens at a food pantry and the types of people served are usually quite different. And it just provides an opportunity for people to really see what's going on right here at home.
Nick, I wonder if you could just kind of talk a little bit about the logistics of the La Crosse Community Thanksgiving Dinner, what time things are starting, and kind of, you know, how people might be able to access a meal.
So on Thanksgiving Day, we are at the La Crosse Center in downtown La Crosse. We open doors at 10 a.m. There is a non-denominational service at 10:30. Dinner will be served from 11 until 3. So if you can join us, fantastic. If you cannot, or if you're homebound, or if you know you have a sick family member, whatever the case may be, we also do delivery. We also do carryouts. So the number on our website, so it's laxthanksgivingdinner.com. All the information is there if you're looking to do carryout or delivery. We also do transportation for folks who would like to join the dinner but can't get there for whatever reason. So same number, they can call and make a ride share.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking about community Thanksgiving dinners. We're here with Nick Marcoux from the La Crosse Community Thanksgiving Dinner, Gene Lundy from the Onalaska and Holman Community Thanksgiving Dinner, Les Stanley from the Sparta Community Thanksgiving Dinner, and Aaron Waldhart from Wafer Food Pantry in La Crosse. Nick, how often are you seeing people utilizing these other ways to participate in the community dinner, things like accessing transportation or having meals delivered to them?
It's definitely grown. I think it's about half and half now. For, you know, about 1,500 will come down for the dinner served, and between carryouts and deliveries is the other half of that. So for whatever reason, you know, that's just how it's kind of turned in the last few years. But yeah, I mean, we're absolutely happy to help anybody and serve anybody that wants to be a part of it.
I wonder if you, if providing things like carryouts, I don't know, do we lose some of the community bonding that comes from sitting down next to your neighbors and sharing that meal?
I think that's part of it. I think the other part, though, is we don't know everyone's story. So, you know, there's no judgment there. If it's something easier that you're able to do and we can provide one less thing off your to-do list to bring this food home so you can enjoy this holiday with family and friends at home, we're happy to have been a part of that. I think that little piece of kindness that we can offer goes a long way, regardless if people can join us or not. I think it's just that sense of community and that sense of sharing a meal that we want to be a part of.
Gene, I wonder if you can give us some of the logistics for the Onalaska and Holman Community Thanksgiving Dinner, how people can access that meal.
Sure. We are serving at the Onalaska Armory from 11 to 2. There will be a prayer at 11 o'clock, and then serving will be from 11 to 2. We also have carryouts that they can sign up. They can actually come in and get, and as well as deliveries. We do have deliveries at 11:30 and also 12:30. They can go to our website to sign up for the deliveries, and that is octd.org. We also are obviously looking for donations every year. It takes about $13,000 to put the event on, and currently we have, I would say, probably between $4,000 and $5,000, which money continues to come in every single day. We do have a lot of volunteers that are absolutely awesome. Mary Cody with Mary Cody's Restaurant and also Sue Kelly with the Onalaska Legion help us cook up our meals for the last 2 years. And so it's been going on for 9 years, but, you know, we always have different changes all the time, which is always a good thing. It is, as Nick was saying, I think there's a lot of people that come together just as a community. And you may be sitting across a table from someone who knows your next-door neighbor, but you don't even realize it until you actually open up that conversation to start talking to them. And, you know, you might visit with their kids for a little while and realize that maybe your niece or nephew were actually going to school with them, or your next-door neighbor's child is going to school with them. You may live on different areas of town, but, you know, coming together as a community is always a wonderful thing.
You mentioned the donations that you guys receive to put on this meal. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about, how the meal is funded.
Sure, and it is strictly by volunteer donation. We do have a lot of people that have stepped up, and also every single year they donate items that we're usually looking for. The Onalaska High School, they actually bake bars for us and also some of the other desserts. The La Crosse Family Restaurant also donates, I'm going to say probably this year, at least 100 to 125 pies, which is, you know, phenomenal for some of the businesses to step forward. We've always had great response from people who, believe in community events and also just community itself.
Les, I wonder if you can share some of the details from the Sparta dinner, how people can access that meal.
Our deliveries occur at the beginning of our cycle. They go out at 11 o'clock. Last year we served 125 meals by delivery. The serving lines open for dinner in-house at 11, and that goes on until 1 o'clock in the afternoon. You asked about fundraising, and that is done solicitation from local businesses and individuals, and we also have a free will offering at the meal as well.
Have you noticed, I know you mentioned you've only been involved for a few years now with the dinner, coordinating the dinner, but, has there been any changes in the number of donations coming in or volunteers? I wonder if there's any concern for kind of rallying that support every year to put on a big meal such as this.
We have 130 people who volunteered ahead of time. We had about another 30 or 40 people who came to have lunch and stayed to help. We're just, you know, that also surprised us. We served about 550 total meals last year. Haven't been at it long enough to become concerned about that. Absolutely blown away by the open hearts in town.
Yeah, Nick, I wonder if you could talk a little bit about funding for the La Crosse community meal. And if there are concerns about, you know, kind of rallying the needed donations to kind of put on this meal every year.
We also are completely volunteer donation funded. So we've got, you know, donors from $1 up to $5,000. To run this thing every year. So a few years back, we almost had to shutter the dinner just based on donations and volunteer availability. Once word got out to the community that was the case, it was a rallying call. I mean, it was a couple of days and the dinner was back on from funding and volunteers, and it's never been an issue since. So we open up the volunteer sign up on November 1st each year, 700 spots, and in a week and a half, we've got 24 left, I think. So it's people from all walks of life coming in just to help out.
Aaron, what are donations like for the Wafer Food Pantry? Can you talk about the need? I wonder just kind of the spirit of giving of the holiday season, how that influences Wafer's activities all year round.
Well, during the holidays, we definitely do see an increase in the amount of giving that occurs. We are reliant on our community for donors in order to keep the doors open and make sure that people have food to put on their table. We have a couple different sources of food. As far as dry product is concerned, so shelf-stable items like peanut butter, soup, pasta, cereal, that kind of stuff. We are a part of the government commodities program, so we receive food from that. We're also reliant on our community for food drives or big events like Rotary collection at the lights in Riverside. And then we also purchase about a third of everything that goes out in that standard food package, and our annual budget is $90,000. So, of course, everything that we're able to do is because of our generous community, from volunteers to, like Nick said, a dollar. A dollar is beneficial to us, too. We can provide four meals for every dollar that's donated. And I think part of what happens with donating, you know, I think people, particularly at this time of year, recognize that there's others in the community that maybe aren't as fortunate as they are and want to be able to give back. And so that's pretty awesome to see that that relationship occurring and wanting to become involved in what's going on in the community and make a change.
Jean, I wonder if you could talk a little bit about what different volunteer opportunities exist for to put on this meal, maybe much more than just handing out the actual food that goes into kind of putting on this event.
We do have opportunities the day after Thanksgiving. Usually we're putting the merchandise that we've actually had there, whether it's plates, napkins, you know, excess material, obviously not food, but we make sure that the day after we have cleanup at the armory. We also have the stuff that needs to be transported back to storage. The day before, we have the Analaska High School basketball team, the boys basketball team, that comes in, and they've been very generous over the years to come in and make sure that all of our tables and chairs are transported to the facility and also set up. The day after, we have the Analaska High School girls hockey that takes them down and also transports them back to the Omni Center. So there's usually cleaning opportunities and also transportation opportunities the day before. And then there's also the day of, which, you know, currently is fulfilled. And then we also have the cleanup crew afterwards. We've had just wonderful people that have stepped forward. We also have a gentleman that he has it's a band called Fly Casual, and he'll be playing during that event also. So we have a lot of volunteer opportunities for people to come in and the groups to actually get involved with this event.
That's Jean Lundy from the Onalaska and Holman Community Thanksgiving Dinner, joining us today to talk about community Thanksgiving dinners in and around La Crosse and organizations helping to make sure everyone has food to celebrate the holiday this year. She's joined by Les Stanley from the Sparta Community Thanksgiving Dinner, Nick Marcoux from the La Crosse Community Thanksgiving Dinner, and Aaron Waldhart from Wafer Food Pantry in La Crosse. You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Les, I wonder what you hope people take away from this event, more than just maybe some excellent turkey and mashed potatoes.
A sense of family, I think, is the most important thing that came from that. We also reach out to the personnel at Fort McCoy because they're local to us. They're about 5 miles away, and they have a pretty good presence in town. We have invited them both for dinner and to volunteer, and we get responses on both sides, and when they come, we try to let them understand that they're part of our community as well.
I wonder if that is important because I have to imagine that a lot of people at Fort McCoy, maybe they're not local to this area.
About half of the employees at Fort McCoy wear uniforms, which means that they live a military life, which means they're moving every 2 to 4 years. The remainder of them, of course, are civilians. Most of them are more stable, perhaps. But the younger people in uniform, their families are portable, and so we have a little bit of an opportunity to put down one root with them.
Nick, I wonder, as La Crosse has maybe become more of a destination for, people moving here for jobs, if that has become a factor, and maybe who wants to turn out to share this community meal?
I think, unfortunately, there's a misconception in the community that this is a dinner for just those in need. We've really tried to change that perception in the last few years that this is a dinner for anybody who wants to socialize, to gather, to feel like they're a part of something bigger than themselves just for that one day out of the year. So we're really trying to break down some barriers, but also there's something to be said about there's more that brings us together than separates us. And this is a really good event for something like that, where we do see a lot of people new to the area where this might be their first perception of what La Crosse is as a community. And we feel like we're really putting our best foot forward with this just based on the army of volunteers that come to this sort of thing. And people get to really see what La Crosse is all about.
The La Crosse community meal, you guys have a lot going on, more than just food available on that day.
There's arts and crafts, games for kids, live music. We've got a couple of large screen TVs for the football fanatics. There's a little bit of something for everybody at this. So, if you think it's just to come down quick, have a bite, you can do that. Or you can hang out, talk to, a neighbor or make a new buddy.
In your experience being at this this meal, I wonder if there are any stories that stick out to you.
We've had, there's a couple of families that volunteer every year. And we see a lot of, I also work in the school district of La Crosse, so we've got a lot of teachers that come down. But one individual story I think is hard for me to put together because it's been such a group effort where we've got, elementary kids are making decorations and cards. Most of those go out to homebound folks with the deliveries. We've got, middle school kids involved with pie labs and they're making pumpkin pies in, dozens and dozens and dozens of them that show up in that part of the dinner. High school kids volunteer their time as volunteers. We've got, teachers and all sorts of community members that come down. So it's to pick out one story and kind of put somebody on the top of that group effort would feel wrong for me, I think. But it's just a nice feeling to be a part of something that seems to be really unique to this area.
Jean, in your time putting together the Onalaskan Holman Community Dinner, I wonder if there are stories or experiences that have stuck in your mind.
We have one that we continue to say every single year because it was so awesome. We have a little old lady that, and I shouldn't say little old lady, I'm probably one of them, but we had a lady that actually, after she got her delivery, there was a little card that she had sent back with the delivery person. Well, we open up the card, and there's this little crucifix on the inside with two little crumpled dollar bills. And we're like, wow, it's a free will offering. But here, those were probably her only $2 that she could afford that day. And she actually wrote a little note in there. I'm sorry, I'm getting sentimental here. But she actually wrote in there, thank you for having this. I don't know what I would have done today. So that's some of the heartfelt stories that we hear, and that's the one that we always will remember from our very first one.
Yeah. Les, I wonder if there are experiences or stories that have stuck in your mind in just your time. You mentioned people, you know, sticking around to help even after they've eaten.
The one that sticks with me is the lady who does all of the routes for the deliveries, and she also does deliveries, and she says she gets no greater joy than stopping at a house, as was just mentioned, where that was the one happy thing that was going to happen that day, and the amount of joy that comes back to you when you experience that is just amazing.
Aaron, I wonder, you know, in Wafer's time serving the La Crosse community, you know, if your organization has been able to identify and maybe tackle some of the barriers that people experience when being able to access food.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of barriers, pride being one of them. And there's not a whole lot that we can do about that other than create an atmosphere that's welcoming to everybody. But one of the largest barriers that we see are for folks that struggle with transportation, whether it's the physical act of transportation or whether it's the other barriers associated with that, like physical disabilities or, you know, just having a hard time getting around. So as far as what we've done to kind of address that situation is we have a couple different programs. One is our Senior Share food package delivery program, and we deliver throughout the county to folks that either can't get to us because of transportation or are homebound. We pack a food package and deliver it once a month. And then we also have our mobile food pantry, which is our retrofitted transit bus that also travels throughout the county taking food to the people. So it stops in their neighborhood or apartment buildings, someplace, community site, churches. People are able to get on to that vehicle and choose their own food right where they live.
Very briefly, as we wrap up, are there any things that you hope people kind of remember during this holiday season as they're thinking about giving?
Well, if you're thinking about giving food, please give something that you would like to eat. If it's been sitting in your cupboard and you don't want to eat it because you're concerned about how old it is, it's best to just throw it out. But also keep in mind the kind of items that you would be thinking about donating to. You know, people that struggle with food insecurity or live in poverty often are faced at they're at a disproportionate risk for health-related consequences because of their economic situation. And so when we think about the foods that are good to eat, you know, it's good to donate whole grains, low-sodium, low-sugar foods. And of course, we'll take monetary donations as well. For every dollar that is donated, we're able to provide four meals on that. So whether it's a gift like financial or with food, or whether it's a gift of time, we appreciate it all.
Aaron Waldhart from Wafer Food Pantry, Nick Marcoux from the La Crosse Community Thanksgiving Dinner, Jean Lundy from the Onalaska and Holman Community Thanksgiving Dinner, and Les Stanley from the Sparta Community Thanksgiving Dinner. Join us today to talk about community Thanksgiving dinners in and around La Crosse and organizations helping to make sure everyone has food to celebrate the holiday this year. Coming up, we'll preview the gun deer hunting season in Wisconsin and hear the latest on stopping the spread of chronic wasting disease. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. To hear audio archives of today's show, visit our website, wpr.org/newsmakers. Our site has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Hope Kerwin. Wisconsin's 9-day gun deer hunt begins this week. The spread of chronic wasting disease, a contagious neurological illness affecting the state's deer population, continues to be a major challenge as officials look for ways to stop the spread of CWD. WPR's Dean Kallenbach in Eau Claire spoke to several people about some of the issues facing deer hunters this season.
We welcome our regular contributors, the outdoor guys. Joe Knight is longtime outdoor editor of the Eau Claire Leader-Telegram. Joe Knight, good to have you along.
Good morning.
And Dave Carlson created, produced, and hosted the long-running TV series Northland Adventures. Dave, good morning to you.
Good morning. Glad to be here.
Now, Mark Rasmussen is also with us. He's a wildlife biologist for Buffalo, Trempealeau, and Buffalo and Trempealeau counties for the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. Mark Rasmussen, good to have you on.
Morning. Thanks for having me.
And also with us, Mark Knoll of ALMA. He's chair of the Buffalo County Deer Advisory Council and the Buffalo County Delegation of the Wisconsin County Conservation Congress. Mark Knoll, good to have you.
It's nice to be here. First time in the studio.
Yeah, good to have you in person for once. So, Mark Knoll, I introduced, in part of my introduction, I pointed out that you chair the Conservation Congress delegation in your county. For the sake of our audience who might not be familiar with it, what exactly is the Wisconsin Conservation Congress, and what is its role?
Well, it's a civilian advisory group to the Natural Resources Board. The Congress, there are representatives, five representatives from each county. So there's, 360, I think it works out to, delegates in the state. And we have spring fish and game hearings that we hold every April. People can come in and give proposals for what they think that they – and we vote on them, and they get studied by the Congress. Eventually, if they hold any real credence to them, we can come back and put them on the questionnaire, and people can vote on them at these spring hearings. And eventually, sometimes they get to go into rules or into law.
We should note that this isn't just an environmental group or a conservation group. They're created by state law, and there are also votes at these spring hearings. So right. Mark is actually an elected official.
So. Right. Okay. So for this season, hunters in five townships in Dunn, Eau Claire, Pepin, and Pepin counties are required to have their deer tested for chronic wasting disease throughout the coming season. Now, specifically, those towns are Rock Creek, the southeasternmost town in Dunn County. I'm getting head shakes. So is my information off?
Yeah, originally...
This is Mark Rasmussen, by the way.
Yeah, Mark Rasmussen. Originally, the CWD advisory team, that's a group formed from the county deer councils from each of the five counties affected by the CWD positive south of Eau Claire, did make a recommendation for mandatory testing, and that was actually approved by the department. But after we received some additional input from the Natural Resources Board, the mandatory requirement was
lifted.
Taken away.
Oh, okay.
And so it is a voluntary sampling effort in that area. But we still are looking for hunters to submit as many CWD samples of adult deer harvested in that five township area.
And what is it that we're looking for from these samples? In other words, there was a doe that was found last year in western Eau Claire County with CWD, and that kind of started this look and see what happens next. So where are we on that, Mark Rasmussen?
Correct. So, yeah, where we're at is this is our second year of sampling for CWD. We did detect a doe a couple years ago now that was CWD positive that initiated this whole process. Since then, we've detected an additional four. We've detected an additional four CWD positives, all hunter harvested deer, and so we're looking for hunters to submit their deer, adult deer, for CWD testing so that we can establish the prevalence and distribution of CWD in the landscape so that we can be informed and the public can be informed on the extent of the disease and what we can do in that area.
This was, Dean, to your point, this is a case of politics getting in the way of science. These guys all wanted mandatory testing because they weren't getting a big enough sample to get credible results or statistically reliable results for chronic wasting sampling. And so they did the right thing, basically said, hunters, bring your deer in, like we always used to do to register
right.
a few years back.
Right.
But they got overruled by someone Mark, higher up.
Mark, Dave Carlson, how many deer are you looking for and what does it represent of the expected hunter harvest in those areas?
We're looking to test 300 adult deer, which is, I guess I don't know exactly what the percentage of the harvest it would be, but it's a sample size that's large enough that will allow us, in combination with the deer that were tested last year in this same area, to establish that prevalence estimate of the disease in southwestern Eau Claire County and Dunpep and Buffalo counties as well.
We're talking about the 2019 gun deer season, and we're joined, the voice you just heard, Mark Rasmussen, wildlife biologist for Buffalo and Trempealeau counties for the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. Also joined by Mark Noel of ALMA. He's a dairy farmer, but also chair of the Buffalo County Deer Advisory Council and the chair of Buffalo County's delegation to the Wisconsin County Conservation Congress. And, of course, the outdoor guys, Joe Knight and Dave Carlson, are also helping out with this program. We talked about those towns that had been recommended for the testing. They all fall within the district of State Senator Jeff Smith. And every week, the one legislator from the Republicans, one legislator from the Democrats gives a weekly radio address. Jeff Smith had it this last week, and he gave the weekly Democratic radio address focusing on CWD. Let's listen to what he had to say.
Next Saturday, November 23rd, hunters will head out for the opening of gun hunting season. Deer hunting is more than just a season in Wisconsin. It's vital to our tourism industry, rural economy, and our state's heritage. You can do your part to preserve Wisconsin's hunting tradition by testing your deer to stop the spread of CWD. CWD is always fatal. With the help of hunters, we can stop the spread of CWD. Hunters must test their deer. You can do this for free at one of the DNR's easily accessible kiosks. This helps scientists understand infection rates and where the disease has spread. Hunters must always properly dispose of deer carcasses at DNR-designated dumpsters to avoid the risk of CWD spreading further. After 8 years of Republican inaction, Democrats are prioritizing CWD eradication. I proudly introduced legislation with my Democratic colleagues to invest in CWD research and fund CWD kiosks and carcass disposal sites. The future of Wisconsin's hunting-related tourism, public health, and rural economy depends on the action we take today. Don't fear learning if your deer was infected. Fear the future of loss of our hunting heritage altogether.
And that's State Senator Jeff Smith in the Democrats' weekly radio address. Senator Smith uses some powerful language at the end of his address, saying that CWD threatens our hunting heritage. And Dave Carlson, I'm wondering, do you see it that way?
Well, it does, absolutely. There's no disputing that. What was amazing to me a few weeks ago, or more recently, there was a poll, a Marquette University poll, which showed that the majority of respondents didn't think CWD was increasing when the statistics bear out the fact that it is increasing. And I think it's a marketing job that has to be undertaken, intensified, to ensure that the public is getting accurate information about the CWD prevalence.
Mark Noel.
I actually serve as the Buffalo County delegate on the Chippewa Valley Advisory Group on the for the CWD thing. We tried the voluntary testing and last year, and we with the distribution map of where the tests were coming from, we found great big huge gaps, not even that far from where the supposed epicenter of this is. We don't even know for sure if we're working with the epicenter of where we're at. We needed better results, very badly needed more results. So we voted unanimously to have this mandatory testing. And it all got thrown by the wayside. And we had a meeting since that time, and our committee is just extremely disgusted with the Natural Resources Board and some of the members, their agendas, how it's coming through. And it's apparent that there are people working against our efforts. We're trying to do what's best for the resource. You can't go wrong there. But there are so many moneyed interests that are, whether they're worried about their real estate value or whatever there is, they're working against us on the side. And they're in the shadows, but they've got themselves in positions where they're pulling a lot of power, and not necessarily for the long-term good of our sport.
Well, that's Joe Knight, you referred earlier to politics. Senator Smith uses his address to accuse Republicans of inaction toward CWD eradication, and it refers to a bill he introduced that would have invested more in CWD research and fund carcass disposal sites. That bill never made it to the floor of the Republican legislature. Joe Knight, is CWD, has it become a political issue?
Deer hunting in Wisconsin has always been a political issue. This is just the latest and perhaps the most serious issue going on, and very hard, even if we did get a mandatory sampling, it would still be, we'd maybe get a better, we're trying to get a snapshot of how widely distributed it is in Western Wisconsin. But even if we have that, the problem is now what do you do? And it's just, especially where I hunt in Brunswick, there's a lot of small property areas. How do you control deer in an area like that? You know, there's refuges all over where a deer can go, and they figure it out after the opening week, and they figure out where the safe zones are, and very hard to get a deer sample or reduce the deer herd in that area.
That's the voice of Joe Knight, a longtime outdoor reporter for the Eau Claire Leader-Telegram, one of our outdoor guys, Dave Carlson being the other one, longtime TV producer of outdoor programming. Also joining us in studio, Mark Rasmussen of the Department of Natural Resources, and Mark Knoll of ELMA, who's the chair of the Buffalo County Deer Advisory Council. We're joined in the conversation by Dave Zilke. Dave Zilke of Eau Claire is he is the chair of the Eau Claire County Delegation of the Wisconsin Conservation Congress and has also been chairing the Chippewa Valley Chronic Wasting Disease Advisory Team. Dave Zilke, I'd kind of like to get your take on what your team was working on, you know, what recommendations it made, and kind of where things stand right now as far as CWD goes.
Okay. The team was working to try to develop a mechanism that would get enough test samples so that we could determine a prevalence of the CWD in our area. As was talked about earlier, you know, we set it up to do mandatory testing and mandatory in-person registration for the first 3 days of the season in the six townships that we were looking, five townships. Okay, it was changed to five. Okay, five townships that we were going to do it in, and, you know, three locations there, and that got shot down. So now we're left with just voluntary testing. So they are going to man those two or three areas in those townships for the first two days of the season to help hunters and, you know, making it a lot easier to get their test papers filled out and, you know, the samples taken. So they're trying to make it as easy as possible for people in the area to get these samples taken.
And to clarify, those counties those towns that were recommended are Rock Creek, which is the southeasternmost town in Dunn County, Albany, the easternmost town in Pepin County, and the towns of Brunswick, Drammen, and Pleasant Valley in Eau Claire County. Dave Zilke, the baiting and feeding thing, we haven't really talked about that yet, but that has been talked about as, you know, the deer herd congregating, not a natural thing, and maybe helping to spread CWD.
You know, the deer shed the prions, you know, for the CWD from excrement, feces, urine, and saliva back and forth, you know, touching each other. And they're a social animal. And when you draw them in unnaturally to congregate in large numbers, you get a lot of social interaction and a lot of transfer of materials between them. And that can only cause an increase in CWD by more transmission of different chemicals between them. Or
Mark Rasmussen.
Yeah, and I'll just point out that by state law, baiting and feeding is banned in counties where CWD has been detected or counties within 10 miles of where CWD has been affected. So the six-county area here in western Wisconsin has baiting and feeding banned and has been since we detected the first positive. As well, there's a number of other counties in the area that have had baiting and feeding banned for quite a number of years now.
Mark Rasmussen, while deer hunting is certainly an important tourism and recreational activity in Wisconsin, the primary focus of the hunt really is to manage the size of the deer herd. DNR estimates the current herd size in Wisconsin is at 1.8 million deer. Is there a number that the DNR is hoping for after the hunt? Or are they? What's the goal of the take this year?
Many of our counties, specifically the farmland counties, do have a very abundant deer population, and that's why we have these county deer councils, advisory councils, is to work with the public to try and manage those deer populations. For example, the counties that I cover, Buffalo County, we are attempting to decrease the deer population. Trempealeau County, they've set an objective to maintain the current deer population. So, you know, we work with these advisory councils to try and set season structure and tag allocation to achieve those goals.
Go ahead, Joe.
I'm a little surprised to be hearing numbers and seeing them pop up now in the Milwaukee Journal because one of the things that, remember the whole deer trustee study that Dr. Kroll came in? And they one of the conclusions of that was to de-emphasize numbers. But people love numbers. We all do as hunters, even though it makes us feel bad. If
we love them as journalists, too.
Yeah, if we hear there's 2 million deer and I didn't get my deer this year, then I feel bad. And
yeah.
Obviously must have been due to DNR mismanagement. Couldn't have been due to luck or my lack of skills as a hunter.
Yeah, well, we always want to blame somebody else. You touched on the efforts in Buffalo County, and Mark Knoll, you're right in the middle of all this. You made some headlines in April as the Buffalo County Deer Advisory Council, which you chair, recommended an antlerless-only hunting season in the county in an effort to reduce the size of the herd there. There was a lot of controversy, and the DNR, the Natural Resources Board, actually ended up rejecting the recommendation. What was the Advisory Council's hope when recommending a hunt in which no bucks could be taken in Buffalo County?
Our vote was in sheer frustration because we're out of tools. We don't have anything left to utilize there. And we actually had Secretary of the DNR took me by the hand and led me over to Eric Loebner at our state convention and said, we're going to get the system going to get some new tools for you.
And who is Eric Loebner?
Well, he's not there anymore.
Okay.
It's a political thing too, but we got nothing. We got nothing. And our CDAC is going to meet again, and we're supposed to go through the same motions that we went through last year. It's really frustrating, and of course we're up against the deer business. The business of deer hunting is a big thing, and it's not necessarily for what's best for the deer. It's for what's best for their pocketbook.
Talk about the symptoms of what you're trying to cure. In other words, what is happening in Buffalo County that has caused you to make that recommendation?
I mean, for the antlers only?
Right. In other words, you know,
why do we need more tools?
We used to
have a tool that worked. It was called Earn a Buck.
Yeah.
It was the one tool that did work, and those same moneyed interest stepped in and got rid of Ernebuck, threw it out as a tool, got the legislature to make it illegal to ever have again.
That was the situation where if you shot an antlerless deer, then you could get a permit to shoot a buck, but you couldn't shoot a buck unless you took an antlerless.
It wasn't popular, but it's the one tool that we had that worked, and they took it away from us. We don't have it anymore, so where are we at?
But I guess the question I was getting at is what is the effect of this large deer herd? What's been the effect in Buffalo County? How is it detrimental to the county?
Well, to start with, deer are not spread evenly. It's not like a coat of paint on the wall. One valley has no deer. Three valleys over, they have them by the hundreds. So they're not evenly spread. That's a problem. You'll see reforestation, you know, the trying to get oaks to grow again, it's just about impossible in big parts of our county. And the deer damage, farmers are putting up with more deer damage because they're leasing their properties out to people that come in with a lot of money. They coming in there for the big bucks, to hunt bucks. They're not necessarily coming in to shoot antlerless deer. Antlerless deer have to be shot to control population. When you want a population to grow, you have a buck-only harvest. And about, I don't know, three-quarters of the county is their buck-only hunting going on, and it's just making things worse for us.
WPR's Dean Kallenbach spoke with guests in Eau Claire this week about some of the issues facing Wisconsin deer hunters as they prepare to take to the woods for their 9-day gun deer hunt starting this week. And that's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Our show is produced by senior news editor and producer John Davis. If you missed part of today's program, including our conversation with organizers from community Thanksgiving dinners happening in the La Crosse area, you can find the audio archives at WPR.org/newsmakers. Our site has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at WPR.org/newsmakers.